Penrod left Amber in the care of Saffron and Jane and took the steamer south to Aswan and Wadi Halfa to rejoin his regiment. He found Jacob waiting for him at the river landing, wearing his new khaki uniform with panache. He stamped his feet as he saluted, his grin was infectious, and one eye rolled sideways. Jacob the outcast had a home at last. He wore the chevrons of a sergeant on the sleeve of the uniform of the Camel Corps of the Egyptian army. His turban had been replaced with a peaked cap and neck flap. He was still becoming accustomed to breeches and puttees, rather than a long jalabiya, so his stance was slightly bow-legged. "Effendi, the peerless and faithful Sergeant Jacob looks upon your face with the same awe and devotion that the moon feels towards the sun. My bags are in the cabin, O faithful and peerless one." They rode southwards on one of the flatbed, track-laying bogies of the new railway. The smoke from the engine stack blew black over them. The soot darkened Penrod's tanned skin, and even Jacob turned a deeper brown, while dusts and sparks stung their eyes. At last the locomotive reached the railhead and came to a hissing halt, with clouds of steam billowing from her brakes. The railway line had already been driven 65 miles into Dervish territory. Penrod's regiment was waiting for him, and his orders were to scout the few small villages along the intended line of rail, then sweep the terrain ahead for the first sign of the Dervish cavalry, which they knew must already be on its way northwards, to dispute the right of way. Penrod found it good to breathe the hot, dry air of the desert again, and to have a camel under him. The excitement of the chase and the battle ahead made his nerves sing like copper telegraph lines in the wind. The sensation of being young, strong and alive was intoxicating. They reached the village at the wells of Wadi Atira. Penrod opened the ranks of his squadron, and they encircled the cluster of mud buildings, which were deserted and falling into ruins. There was one chilling reminder of the Dervish occupation. At the entrance to the village stood a makeshift but obviously effective gallows, made from telegraph poles that the army had abandoned when it withdrew after the fall of Khartoum. The skeletons of the souls who had perished upon it had been cleaned and polished by the abrasive, dust-laden wind. They still wore their chains. Penrod moved forward past Tanjore, where the desolation was similar. The old British fort at Akasha, relic of the Gordon Relief Expedition, was in ruins. The storerooms had been used by the Dervish as execution chambers. Desiccated human carcasses lay in abandoned attitudes on a dusty floor, which was thick with the droppings of lizards and the shed skins of vipers and scorpions. Penrod converted Akasha into an entrenched camp, a base from which the Camel Corps could sally out. He left two of his squadron to hold the camp, and with the remainder of his regiment he pressed on into the desert of the Mother of Stones to search for the Dervish. While he scoured the land along the Nile, behind him the railhead reached Akasha, and his rudimentary camp was transformed into an impregnable fortress and staging station guarded by artillery and Maxim machine gun detachments. As Penrod's camels approached Firket, a few Bedouin galloped towards them, waving their arms and shouting that they were friendly. They reported to Penrod that only hours before they had been pursued by a marauding party of Dervish cavalry, and although they had escaped, five of their comrades had been overtaken and massacred. He sent a troop of his camels forward to scout the caravan route that led through a narrow, boulder-strewn defile towards Firket, 5 miles ahead. No sooner had they entered the defile than the troop commander found himself confronted by at least 250 Dervish horsemen, supported closely by almost 2,000 spearmen. Trapped in the defile, the commander wheeled his men round in an attempt to extricate them and bring them back to the support of Penrod's main force. Before they could complete the manoeuvre, the Dervish horses charged. Immediately, both sides became entangled in wildest confusion, and covered by a dense fog of brown dust thrown up by the hooves of the horses and the pads of the camels. In the tumult, all words of command were drowned. From the mouth of the defile, Penrod saw that disaster was about to engulf his embattled squadron. "Forward!" he shouted, and drew his sabre. "Charge! Go straight at them!" With three troops of camels behind him, he crashed into the struggling mass of men and beasts. With his left hand he fired his Webley and hacked with his sabre at the gibber-clad figures half hidden in the swirling curtains of dust. For minutes the outcome hung in the balance. Then the dervish broke and scattered back behind the shields of their spearmen. They left 18 of their dead lying on the sand and retreated towards Firket. Penrod sensed that they were trying to lead him into a trap and let them go. Instead, he turned aside and climbed Firket Mountain. From the towering heights he glassed the town below and saw immediately that his instinct had been true. He had found the main body of the dervish army. It was massed among the mud-brick buildings, and the cavalry lines extended as far as the banks of the Nile, a mile beyond the city. At a rough estimate, 3,000 horse, and only Allah knows how many spears, he said grimly.